see what looked to be melted rock. Someone really inquisitive might decide to chip some away, but that was unlikely. It was even more unlikely for anyone to come close. There was nothing for anyone on this side of the lake. The water was a serene silver, reflecting the trees around the rim of the lake. This wasn't far from the spot where he and Lyda took turns leaving memories for each other in the water, 2 months before they ever met. Dezol felt as if he could leave long-lasting memories now. He was certain every sense and feeling would be as clear as reality. Why shouldn't he? There was no one who could read memories besides Lyda and Basin. Yes, he would leave one for Lyda now. Dezol couldn't remember the last time he'd left a memory, but he remembered how to begin. He started the process by going deep into his mind, past the black wall, and into the other plane where he hovered over the ocean of energy. He would be able to make the memories without going into the ocean, but doing so would make them much more powerful. What was he doing? This was a poor idea. He'd lost himself in trying to relive the past. He pulled himself out of the other plane and got back to work storing the Ackerel bags. For all he knew, Fatal had an elf roaming Kiro searching for memories. Fatal himself might be on the hunt. It was foolish for Dezol to make one. It was even more foolish for him to visit the other plane. Doing so could alert Fatal to his location. Not with any accuracy unless they were close, but it would be clear that he was no longer in Greenedge. Dezol let out a long sigh. He didn't know when he would be able to practice in the other plane again. If Fathol wanted him dead for what he could accomplish there, it would be a waste if Dezol didn't figure out what he could do with that plane. When the Ackerel bags were hidden, they made their way around the lake. Beatrix and Kernich let Dezol take the lead. It seemed wrong to come home before they were done with their mission, and when there could be men or elves waiting for them, but there was no stopping now. The familiar scent of the water, the sight of his town asleep. He'd taken this same walk hundreds of times after his night climbs or swims, and nothing was going to keep him from at least seeing his tavern. He had to make sure it was still there, with his mother inside, and if there was no one waiting to capture them, all the better. "Do you remember where it is?" Dezol asked his comrades. "Yes," they answered. "Then we should split up to take different paths there. Check roofs and alleys. If someone spots you..." Dezol stopped as he realized there was no hope of running or taking a portal to escape. They could only fight. Kernish must have realized the same thing.
"Just make sure no one sees us."
They separated as they came into the town. Dezol took the most direct path to his tavern. He would get there first, for he had the best idea where anyone could hide to spy on the place. Kaevol was a quiet town, yet eerily silent at night. Everyone knew that their neighbours could hear anything they did after sundown, so most people spoke quietly. Dezol had heard husbands and wives screaming at each other, but this was a rare occurrence. There were no children here to cry during late hours, at least not anywhere near Dezol's tavern. When the late king first decreed that a new city would be built around the lake here, he put rules in place. No one with children or with plans to conceive would be permitted to settle here, not until they were done digging the river and constructing the water mills. But many of the people who lived around the entrance to the town were either old, alone, or didn't want children anyway. These were the type of people who'd been attracted to moving to Kaevol in the first place, because they would be guaranteed work for their lifetime. Dezol supposed that rule could be overturned as well, with the death of Beatrix's father, and now the war. A dead man's promise held no weight. That's why the current king of Kiro and the current king of Tenrad had so much trouble agreeing to peace. A future king could always come along and find a reason to fight. The only way for a king to keep his people permanently safe was to conquer the other territory. But if a power-greedy king controlled both territories, then the people might be better off going to war. Dezol figured that Lyda's father knew King Horthon of Tenred well enough to tell that giving him control over Kiro was not in everyone's best interest. Otherwise Basin would have opted to give the Ackerel metal to Horthon to use to end the war. Dezol met Kernich down the road from his tavern.
"I didn't see anyone," Dezol whispered.
"I didn't either."
They waited there for Beatrix. Dezol started to worry when she didn't show up. Eventually he spotted her, making hand signals. She showed her palms, as if asking them to wait. Then she snuck off behind a home.
"What's she doing?" Dezol asked.
"Am I supposed to know?"
Kernich shot back.
"You know more about her than I do."
"I know more about the princess she was, but we both know this Beatrix equally well."
That was true, Dessel realized. The Beatrix he'd first met, the woman intent on capturing Lyda's father, seemed like a different person to him. She'd acted as if she didn't care about anyone or anything. Her only goal was to find Basin, to stop whatever he was doing. It was how Dessel knew that the headmaster was up to something important. Now Dessel knew Beatrix would risk her life, not just to stop this war, but to rescue any of those involved in this effort. Fortunately, it hadn't come to that yet.
"We still have to get Basin and Lyda out."
"I know," Kernich interrupted. "You remind me as if I might forget. I won't. As soon as an opportunity arises, we will take it."
"And if it doesn't?"
"Then we will create our own when we have the Wind Knight's support."
They fell silent. If it was any other princess out there alone, Dessel might feel the need to go after her. But he stayed put and waited calmly. "Have you and Beatrix kissed?" Dessel had wondered about it for a while, but the question never felt important enough to ask. Curiosity got the better of him now.
"Have you and Lyda?"
A simple yes felt like such a weak answer. There was so much more Dessel had felt from Lyda than just the touch of her lips. Now he understood why Kernich had asked him the same question. Answering would feel like simplifying something that deserved so much more than a one-word confirmation. Kernich said,
"I know, and you know as well."
Dessel nodded. He heard someone coming up behind him and spun around. Beatrix was just a few steps away.
"The two of you shouldn't stand out in the open,"
she complained in a whisper.
"I could have killed one of you before the other got out his weapon."
"Where the bastial hell did you go?"
Kernich asked.
"I sensed people awake all around us. I thought it best to investigate. None have any emotions akin to vigilance. If there were men or elves here looking for us, they aren't here now."
Dessel relaxed and headed to the front of his tavern. He was hungry enough to eat 3 dinners and tired enough to sleep through the next day. But he couldn't let himself relax too much. He had to climb up the face of the Fjallion Mountains while it was still dark. That left no time for sleeping and too little time with his mother. He still had his key. Undoing the lock and opening the door sent a tingle down his back. The air smelled like grease and ale. It smelled like home.
"Dessel?"
Effie called from the kitchen. She came out and put her hands over her mouth. They hurried toward each other and embraced.
"Are you all right?"
Effie asked.
"I am. Are you?"
She was only up during the night when something was wrong.
"I'm fine. Just haven't been able to sleep very well recently. Worried about you."
She leaned back, holding his shoulders.
"The Polkans told me about the battle with Fatal's elves. Basin sent you away with the Akarul."
"Rila visited you?"
"Yes, with Cleve and Adria. They're worried about you, so you can imagine how worried I've been."
It had been years since Effie had spoken to her childhood friend Rila, Adria's mother. It sounded as if there was no bad blood between them anymore, something Dessel had wanted for his mother for quite some time. Funny how it was worry that seemed to bring them back together.
"You shouldn't worry," Dessel consoled. "We'll be fine. How long until morning?" "Yes, you should leave before then. It'll be a couple hours, I think, until sunrise. A man loyal to Alaphon watches the tavern every day. He shows up at sunrise and leaves at sunset. He's kind, surprisingly. It's Yonrad, Dessel. He knows you and Kernich."
Her tone was disapproving. Dessel had cut Yonrad's leg when the guard attempted to prevent them from escaping the castle's prison with the unconscious Beatrix in their arms. Yonrad had reached out to grab Dessel's leg as they ran by. He could still remember the shooting pain from the deep cut Gurgis had inflicted moments before Dessel had killed the man. Fortunately, it sounded like the wound Dessel had caused to Yonrad's leg had healed if he was able to come and go each day. Yonrad had cared about Dessel's life before realizing who he was, instructing him to keep quiet and stop trying to protect the traitorous princess. Dessel now figured out why his mother looked as if she was holding back words. Yonrad must have told her that her son was part of a group of the most wanted criminals in Ovira. It was too late to turn himself in for a more lenient punishment, if he were a coward.
"What did Rila tell you about the end of the battle?" Dessel asked. "We didn't get to see what happened." "The elves let everyone go except for Basin and Lyda. They said they'd only release them for the Akarul, which I'm hoping you still have."
Dessel didn't see any reason to keep what he knew from his mother any longer.
It should already be clear to everyone in Ovira that their intent was to get the Ackerel to the Wind Knights.
Yes, I still have it. Hidden. We have to get it to Rela and Cleave.
What's happened with the war?
I hate to be a bother, Beatrix interrupted, but may we continue this conversation in the kitchen? We haven't eaten in more than a full day.
We could use baths as well, Kurnitch added.
When Beatrix stared at him, he shrugged.
What? She said we had a couple of hours.
I'm sorry, Mother, Bezel apologized for them, but we really do need to eat.
I'd be happy to prepare something, Effie offered. Come on.
And the baths?
Kurnitch asked.
I'll get those ready for us as soon as I have a moment, Bezel told him.
They moved into the kitchen, where a bottle of Sakal stood next to a half-full glass. Effie picked it up and drank it down in one gulp, then moved the bottle aside.
The war has not gone well for your brother, Beatrix, she said. Eonrad told me that the siege of Tenred ended 2 days ago, when Tenred's forces surprised Alaphon's army by coming out from behind their wall as well as flanking them from the forest. No one knows how Tenred got troops into the woods without anyone seeing, but the battle didn't go well for our army. Kiro's troops fled back to the Fjallion Mountains, but Tenred chased them up. There was a battle atop the mountains. Hundreds died on both sides. In the end, Tenred retreated.
So Alaphon's army is still atop the mountains? Bezel asked his mother.
Yes, on the northern side. There might be a hold up there for weeks. Tenred shouldn't be able to beat them with a charge, and Tenred shouldn't be able to get through the pathway either. They could go around and attack this town, but it's unlikely. They'll have no way to retreat when our army comes down upon them.
So it's a stalemate, Kurnitch said.
For now.
Effie took a few moments to focus on preparing their meals. Meat was already cut into slabs, potatoes peeled. She'd been up for a while, apparently, preparing for tomorrow. Dazzle wished he could return home for good to ease his mother's worry. She took out her wand and set 2 controlled fires on the stove beneath pans. Dazzle's mouth started to water when she set the cuts of meat down onto the pans. Unfortunately, there would be no sauce, which would have elevated the meal from good to great, but butter and salt would do just fine. Dazzle was so hungry he no longer felt the pain in his stomach. He could only recognize it from the weakness of his muscles and the blur of his vision in this dim kitchen.
"I always like to bathe before a fine meal,"
Kurnitch complained.
"Best your hell! Fine!"
Dazzle left to prepare the baths, but only because it might be a long time before they had another chance. When he was clean, Dazzle was glad for Kurnitch's stubbornness. Dazzle sat down at a table where a plate of meat and potatoes waited for him. Effie handed him his fork and knife, then put her hand on his shoulder and kissed his head.
"Thank you for this, Mother."
"Thank you,"
Kurnitch echoed with a full mouth.
"Delicious."
Beatrix hummed in agreement as she ate. Both the potatoes and meat were crispy on the outside and succulent on the inside. They could have been half-burnt and Dazzle would have still enjoyed them. Effie let the three of them eat without speaking, as she nursed another glass of Sakal. Eventually she asked Dazzle,
"I hope you're not planning on climbing the mountain to give the Ackerel to the Wind Knights. Rela told me how heavy the bags are."
"No, I can't," Dazzle agreed, "but I'm going up there to see if I can speak to someone from the Wind Knights. We have to know where we can meet them to pass off the Ackerel."
"Dazzle, there are over 1,000 people up there who have the order to kill you, Beatrix, and Kurnitch. Not capture, kill. You must think of a better plan."
He swallowed.
"I'm open to one."
Effie was silent for a while, then gave a sigh.
"All my ideas involved you giving up, which I know you shouldn't do now. But have you thought about what will happen at the end of this?"
"Yes. It will be fine if everything works out. It has so far. There have just been some complications."
She laughed bitterly.
"Complications? I'm sure that's one way of putting it. Let's say you do give the Ackerel to the Wind Knights, and you do find the apple you need, and you do manage to build a catapult of some kind that can create an explosion without Alaphon's army, or Fathol's army, or Hawthorne's army overpowering you and taking this catapult. Then what?"
"Why did you say catapult?"
Kurnitch asked her.
She turned up her hands.
"It's the first thing I thought of."
"Yes, but why did you think of that specifically?"
Kurnitch pressed.
"I suppose I imagine some sort of catapult that can launch clusters of apple vine in between standing walls of Ackerel."
Everyone was silent. Beatrix was first to speak.
Do you mean that it's a normal catapult, but with two walls of acryl rising up along the trajectory of the arm? It's just what came to mind. That could work, Dezel realized. None of you have thought about this?
Effie sounded incredulous.
We haven't had the time, Dezel explained. There have always been more immediate problems in our way.
You still haven't answered me, she said. You and the Wind Knights somehow managed to build this catapult. Then what?
That's it, Dezel said. The threat of it should be enough to force the kings to agree to peace.
Or what?
Or we destroy their castle,
Beatrix answered without delay.
Kernish stared at them.
Is that something you want?
No, I wouldn't want anyone to die needlessly. Besides, the castle is the only home I've known. I might never be able to return, but there's no reason to want it demolished. But my brother should agree to peace under that threat. It's Hawthorne I don't know about.
I can't imagine you or the Wind Knights would condone actually destroying Hawthorne's castle, Effie said.
We might have to, Dezel told her, if it will stop the war.
She looked at him with surprise.
You can still come with us, Dezel said, mostly to alleviate the tension of her stare.
That mage who attacked our tavern is still alive. His name is Irwell. I found out from Lyda. He went to the academy and harassed her. He won't have any remorse about killing us. None of us can defend ourselves against him as well as you can. We aren't Sarsha's mages.
I'm sure the Wind Knights have at least one Sarsha's mage. How are you going to join with them? They're still fighting this war.
I will leave that decision up to them after I speak with one of their members tonight, Dezel stood up. Unfortunately, I'd better leave now. It'll take a while to get to them after I climb up the mountain, and I need the night for cover.
Effie cursed under her breath.
You're right. She hugged him tightly. You can come back any night. Yonrad won't be here, and they don't bring psychics here to question me. Yonrad seems to care more about keeping the peace in this town than watching for you.
I'm glad we finally have a guard with that priority in mind. Please try not to worry.
I will be fine. I'll try.
Kernich and Beatrix stood at once. It was only then that Dezel realized he would be saying goodbye to them as well, hopefully for a short time.
I can't remember the last time you left us by choice, the warrior told Dezel.
I think it was after we came back from Caenwyn, Beatrix said. We stayed at the academy while you recovered, Kernich, after saving me from Micklin's assassination attempt. Meanwhile, Dezel came here.
I won't be long, Dezel promised them. I'll run to the mountainside to save time. I'll meet you there shortly after sunrise, I assume. I'll know what to do depending on what the Wind Knights tell me.
He headed toward the door.
Wait, Dezel, Beatrix said. If you are delayed, we need somewhere else we can meet.
You can come back here, Effie offered, so long as you do it at night.
It pained Dezel to disagree, for there was nowhere else he wanted to be more. But it might not be safe.
The best location for us to meet depends on what might go wrong. If I'm seen and have to flee, Alaphon will start sending psychics here to question you. They'll find out we have plans to return. We have to meet somewhere else. I'm sorry, Mother, but again, you could come with us and stay until the end, or at least until you decide you've had enough.
Dezel had some hope this time.
I would never have enough and choose to abandon you. I would join now because I see how much I'm needed, so it's even harder for me to stay behind. Let me explain. When word got around that the tavern was empty, it would be clear that I had left to help you in some way. It would be clear you had returned with the Acheral. The army doesn't spend much effort searching for you, for no one knows where Basin sent the three of you in a portal. That would change once I was missing.
Dezel was surprised he didn't think of this, no doubt too eager to have his mother join them.
You're right.
He waited for anyone else to offer a plan. His mind stuck on wondering what he could do to alleviate the worries of his mother as she looked toward him sadly. He hoped it wouldn't be long before he returned, but he had a feeling that this visit to his home would be the last one for a long while. His mother probably knew the same.
Ray Whiteforest, Beatrix said. We'll meet at the center of the forest if something goes wrong.
All right.
It's past time to leave. Dezel gave his mother one last hug, then headed for the door.
Be careful!
Kernich called after him.
Very careful, Beatrix added.
Dezel left the tavern, closed the door behind him, and burst into a full sprint. Beatrix and Kernich would take their time rummaging through his mother's closets for spare clothing to take that Effie wouldn't mind giving up. She still had some old clothing of Dezel's father's that might fit Kernich's large frame.
Meanwhile, Effie was of the same small stature as the princess. Beatrix would have a lot to choose from. Dazzle had packed his own bag after his bath. It now bounced against his back as he ran. In short time he made it to the rows of trees guarding the lake. The apple seeds he still carried in his pocket. He cursed as he realized it. He should have given them to Kernich or Beatrix in case something went wrong. He could turn back, he supposed. But it was too tempting to keep them and hand them off to the Wind Knights. The more responsibility he could pass off to them, the more freely he could take a breath. He swallowed past a lump as he realized that something going wrong wasn't likely to result in a meeting in the forest. It would likely mean his death. He must not think about it. Dazzle rushed around the trees that he knew to be surrounding the lake and eventually came to the mountainside. It used to seem so tall to him. Now it appeared easy to scale. He set his hands and feet onto the sloping leg of the mountain and started up. He had to remind himself to be careful as he quickly came to the vertical part of the mountainside. One slip would mean his death. Still, he was calm. Too calm. He was getting too arrogant. He focused on every switch of his hands, every lift of his knee and placement of his foot. It was a joy to concentrate on the climb and forget his troubles, such as Lyda possibly being tortured. He tried to clear his mind of the thought as he continued to climb, but now that he'd reminded himself of her suffering, it wouldn't budge. So instead he used it to keep up his drive. He couldn't fail on this mountainside or in sneaking past the army to find one of the Wind Knights. He would do what needed to be done for her and her father, because it was what they wanted. Chapter 14. The top of the Fialion Mountains on this southern side was not as flat as its northern side. There were two ways to look at the Fialion Mountains. It was either one mountain split by a great crevice, which is how Dazzle liked to think of them, or one could say that the crevice had turned it into two similar mountains. Up here, the mountain tops looked as though they were stairs made for giants, the way the rock stacked on top of itself. Each stair had ridges across the face with a downward sloped edge at the middle, as if weighted down by years of bearing giant feet. Dazzle climbed each one from its base to its highest point, where he would be able to see the greatest distance when he was atop it. There were cracks wide enough for him to fall through, forcing him to make light in this dark night. If a faraway group was watching for climbers, they would certainly spot him. Fortunately, it was well known that no man could climb the Fialion Mountains from the southern side, so Dazzle didn't need to worry about anyone spotting him. Eventually he made it past the uneven stairs that shifted from down to up, to up, to down. He crossed over onto the flat side of the mountain where he used the spyglass he'd taken from his room to check what he could see. The mountain, as shadowed as it was, looked like a hole in the starry sky. Dazzle stayed patient as he slowly shifted his gaze through the spyglass, eventually finding what he was looking for. A few fires burned on the far side of the shadow, small and without enough light to see how many people were either awake or asleep around them. Dazzle wanted to keep his promise to be careful, but the army's camp was quite a distance away. He had to run to get there before sunrise. He watched the ground for holes or cracks, holding a bit of bastial energy together for light. These mountains were named after small men, Fialions, who were here centuries before any humans came. They tried to come to an agreement with the humans in Kiro and Tenred, who always tended to go to war against one another, many fighting over the advantage of this mountain that stood between the two territories. There had been an agreement for many years, which humans often violated. Recently, the Fialions gave up on their home here in the mountains. They left without telling any humans where they were going, akin to the Slagari, who dwelled underground somewhere. The disappearance of both species made the humans seem toxic to the continent, an argument Fatal was known for making. Dazzle was certain that Kiro's whole army wouldn't be atop these mountains. There was nothing for them to eat except what was brought to them. It was more likely that just a portion of troops were stationed here to hold the mountains, and many of them probably slept in the old Fialion's home, just under the surface of the mountain top. There were tunnels and caverns that ran throughout both of these mountains. Perhaps some tunnels even made it across the top of the Fialion pathway that split these mountains in half.
Dazzle never had the luxury of seeing the inside of the mountains, but he'd spent enough time in the Dyrick Mountains to want to keep out of any mountains for the rest of his life. He had to slow his pace as he came closer to the large group of people in shadow. He kept to the western side of the mountain's edge. Most people he saw were a good distance from the edges, making it unlikely for someone to be in his path. The sun was about to rise, an orange line across the horizon, the bottom half of the sky already turning blue. It would be a beautiful and bright morning, the opposite of what Dazzle needed. The mountain was still dark, fortunately, but the fires he'd seen earlier must have been put out. He couldn't locate them any more. He picked up his pace. He was surprised when he looked to his right and spotted the silhouette of someone who might have been close enough to see that Dazzle didn't wear armor or a uniform. At first he thought the person was moving away from him, but then he'd realized the figure was walking down into the mountains. From what he'd heard about this place, there were dozens of stairways that led down from the mountain top. Many were marked by stones jutting out of the otherwise flat mountain top, but some weren't marked at all. This person must have come out from below the mountain top with no warning to Dazzle, then had gone back down. Dazzle realized he could be seen by someone else doing the same thing. With fear pressing on his chest, he sprinted a little while longer until he was just about in the midst of a large group. He slowed to a walk and headed toward them. He started to pass by without anyone noticing. No one appeared to be sleeping here. Instead, they looked to be stacking wood for fires. Soon there would be many more soldiers up here, Dazzle figured, as the sleeping men and women awoke. He didn't know how he would find a wind knight before then without getting even closer to these people. Cleave and Rela were commanders of the army, last Dazzle had heard. However, Alaphon had threatened to take away their roles before the battle with the elves. Dazzle couldn't recall exactly why, just that Beatrix's brother was getting the sense that the wind knights prioritized peace over victory. As Dazzle walked past more troops, looking for anyone he recognized, he started to realize something. Adria was smart, and so were her parents. They would do everything they could to ensure Dazzle could find one of them. He stopped walking so closely to the camps and went back to the western side. As he came close to the edge, he noticed someone training alone, and with a staff. Adria, he hoped. The staff was her weapon of choice, that and a bow. Dazzle walked toward what appeared to be a young woman, gaining confidence as he noticed the length of her hair reaching just past her shoulders and her height matching his own. She stopped swinging her staff around as she noticed him. They were just shadows, but he could still recognize her.
"Dazzle," she whispered.
"Adria?"
"Yes."
It was difficult not to run to her, but doing so would create unwanted attention. There were many others nearby. They walked to meet each other. Dazzle wanted to hug her, but both of them knew better.
"It is very good to see you," he whispered.
"And you? Are you all right? And Beatrix and Kernich?"
"Yes. What about you and your parents?"
"We're fine. But Lyder and Basin were taken after you left."
"We know. Fatal's elves found us. They told us they have the healers, and will only release them for the Ackerel. They tried to kill us when we refused, but we escaped. We have to give the Ackerel to the Wind Knights, or I'm certain either Fathal or Alaphon will eventually take it from us. What is the plan, Adria? How do we get it to your parents?"
She grumbled something as she looked toward a group nearby.
"I wish one of them was close. We had the idea for me to train here during the night so you could find me, but I don't think any of us were expecting you to come this soon. All plans fell apart when I went back with my parents to fight in the war. It's all I could do. I hope you and the others know I'm not abandoning you."
"We know, and I'm sure Lyder and Basin know as well.
While we were fighting the elves, the rest of our army finished constructing catapults to break down Tenrid's outer wall, but Hawthorn had already finished building his own catapults. He struck first. I had just arrived with a small group of wind knights you met when we were ambushed. So many died in just the first few minutes. They destroyed our catapult. If we can't stop the fighting, then we have to win this war. Hawthorn will kill everyone in this army and more."
Part of the peace agreement between Kiro and Tenrid, which had lasted 25 years, was a prohibition against constructing siege weapons. If one kingdom was caught building them, it would be the same as a declaration of war. It was no wonder both territories had only begun constructing catapults when the fighting broke out.
"I hope that means the Wind Knights are still ready to take the Ackerel and refocus their efforts on peace," Dazzle said.
Yes, but we no longer have access to Corin Forest, where my parents planned to receive the Akril and Epple, then start building. I don't suppose...
I have Epple seeds. I hope they will grow into the vines we need.
Great. You three have done well. But...
Her voice trailed off.
I know you can't bring the Akril up here. You can't climb with it, and we can't hide it in the middle of our army. We have to meet somewhere, but this is the only time I have alone. Mechlin and Erwal are here, Dezzel. I have to look at them every day. I even have to fight beside them. They watch me, suspecting that you will find me just as you have now. Psychics question me every day about you and the others.
Alaphon will hear of anything we plan.
Meanwhile, we are one or two battles away from losing this war. There has been talk of using the Akril against Horton instead of for peace.
The Wind Knights are saying this?
It's only if we don't find a way to keep all of this away from Alaphon. He is not fit to rule. But we still might be able to do something to prevent him from being a tyrant if he wins. If Horthen wins, however, he'll have everyone killed who fought against him. Prisoners of Tenret have confirmed this. Then there's the elves to worry about. We can't leave to fight them. I don't know how we're supposed to free Lyder and Basin.
We will have to wait until the war is over. Not lost or won, but when peace is reached. Then we will figure out how to free them. In the meantime, there needs to be somewhere that I can meet the Wind Knights to give them the ingredients. We'll need time for the apple to grow, and enough room for the Wind Knights to build a device that can cause an explosion. I suppose there are several locations that would work. All we need is to keep it secret from everyone else on this continent.
Adria let out a bitter laugh.
I know, Dessel agreed. It seems impossible. Even if I knew of a location, you would be forced to tell Alaphon's troops.
The sun's coming up. Adria warned him, "You have to leave and not return. They'll question me and be ready for you next time."
But nothing had been figured out.
"The next time we meet, it should be that place I described," Dessel said.
"That place doesn't exist."
"It does. It has to, or we fail. We will not fail."
Adria looked to the side and cursed.
"Micklin's coming. Run!"
Before Dessel could move, he heard Micklin shouting loud enough for nearly everyone in the quiet camp to hear.
"Do not run, Dessel Fogg! Just take us to the Akril, then you will live!"
Dessel looked over his shoulder. It was too dark to recognize Micklin until Erwal, the mage with a hooked nose who would have destroyed Dessel's tavern if it meant killing Beatrix, gathered a cluster of bastial energy. The white light revealed him and Micklin as well as hundreds behind him, taking out their swords and wands. Dessel turned and fled for the western edge. He was already close. He looked back to find exactly what he'd expected, a fireball soaring toward him. He had to jump to keep it from striking his legs. The explosion sent him flying as his feet and ankles felt to be on fire. He flipped once in the air as he started to come down, looking ahead for the best place to land. Shock took away his breath as he saw nothing but the sea hundreds of feet below. He spun in the air as he took out his dagger. There was a small lip of stone left for him to reach. He extended his arms and slammed his dagger into the softened rock. His legs swung over and his knees slammed into the mountainside, punching into the smooth wall deep enough to get stuck. With both hands squeezing the hilt of his dagger, he tried to free his knees first, managing to pull one out. He stuck his foot into the mountainside, then used it as leverage to get out his other knee. The dagger, however, was too deep for him to pry free without throwing himself off backward. He left it as he started his dangerously quick descent. Rather than climbing down, he slid through the muddy stone. He'd done this once before with Beatrix and Lyder shortly after they'd freed Lyder from the Marrow's cave, but she had helped soften the mountain then. Dessel had his practice to thank for his improvement since then as his gloves and boots sliced through the mountainside, shaving off sheets of the stone that spewed out around him. Dessel looked up, expecting archers and mages to soon fire down at him, but instead he saw Micklin jumping over the edge. Something seemed to catch him and straighten him out as he started to fall, pyphorial energy, no doubt. The pyphorial mage fell faster than Dessel slid through the mountain, soon catching up to him. Micklin then slowed to match Dessel's speed. Dessel couldn't go any faster. Doing so required softening the stone even more, but he would likely fall through it too fast to stop himself at any point. Micklin lifted his palms and two swords pulled themselves out of the sheaths on his belt. Dessel knew how fast Micklin could fling his swords with pyphorial energy. They had gone through Kernich's massive arms, deep enough into the warrior's chest to have killed him if it wasn't for the quick work of the Academy's healers. Dessel watched Micklin's hands, not his swords. They were just clear enough against the blue sky. When Micklin flicked his wrist, Dezzel knew a sword was coming. He stopped, softening the mountain, and tensed his arms and legs. He stopped suddenly and heard a clank below him as a sword bounced off the mountainside. Micklin swooped out from the mountain a few yards below Dezzel. The mage reached toward his fallen weapon as if to grab it with biforial energy, then cursed as it continued to fall. Needing to get away from Micklin, Dezzel thought of something that might work. He softened the mountainside again and started to slide through its muddy texture. He changed his mind's hold on the essence of the mountain. Rather than softening the smooth surface in front and below him, he set his mind across the stone at a diagonal. He turned his toes, pushed his shoulder into the spongy wall, and slid down and away from Micklin. As the biforial mage let out another curse, this one of surprise, Dezzel wobbled and nearly fell out from the mountain as one leg kicked free by accident. He slid on just one foot, with only one hand and one shoulder in the mountain. His other two limbs flailed, trying to swim in the air to get himself better attached. He had no idea where Micklin and his last floating sword were at the moment. Dezzel looked down. The water of the ocean was far, but he might be able to land without breaking anything. No, this he did not trust. He couldn't get his two free limbs back into place and soon would fall, but stopping suddenly seemed even more likely to throw him off balance. All he could do was soften the stone as much as possible while leaning into it. His ear scraped against the side hard enough for him to know there was blood. He didn't care as long as he made it to the water. Then what? Dezzel was focusing too much on keeping from falling to figure it out. Micklin glided down in front of Dezzel and soon matched his speed as they descended together. A sword came down from above Dezzel's view, its tip pointed at his torso. Micklin would make sure this one didn't miss as he waited to line up his shot perfectly. Dezzel stopped softening the stone to come to a sudden halt. Rather than attempting to balance himself and swing his limbs around and grab hold of the mountainside, he jumped out. He was in a free fall as he looked down at Micklin. The biforial mage cursed again and tried to swerve out of the way, but Dezzel managed to grab Micklin's cloak. The mage made a choking sound as Dezzel fell past and yanked Micklin's cloak with him, pulling the mage down. There were only a few moments before they would hit the water. Dezzel surveyed below. There was no beach, no rocks, just ocean. He looked up at a thrashing Micklin in the air. A cloud of biforial energy slapped against Dezzel's forehead, knocking his head back, but he held tight. Another gust struck him, this time in the chest. Again, he held tight. Dezzel crashed into the ocean, the cloak clutched against his chest. He ran his hands up it as he sank into the water until he got them around Micklin's head. Something clicked within Dezzel, the same way it had while he was fighting Gurgis in Kiro's prison. He would have to kill Micklin here, or Micklin would kill him. He shoved down Micklin's head, pushing the biforial mage deeper under the water. Dezzel ignored his urge to go up for a breath, knowing he could outlast nearly any other man. He'd spent much of his adult life swimming in the lake. Holding his breath for long periods came naturally now. Micklin's hands seemed lost as they flailed around, slowed by the water. Dezzel expected the biforial mage to reach up for Dezzel's arms, but he didn't. Dezzel realized his mistake as a pocket of what looked to be air parted water above Micklin's head. It stretched to wrap around Dezzel's arms. He tensed his muscles to prepare for the wrestling match as he kept hold of Micklin's head. The biforial energy connected itself around his wrists and started to pull up. To Dezzel's surprise, Micklin lifted his hands to push the bottom of the clear biforial energy in the same direction. Dezzel's strength was no match for both. The two of them drifted apart. Dezzel tried to pry his wrists out of the ring of biforial energy as Micklin propelled himself upward, reaching Dezzel's level in the water. Dezzel looked up to see how deep they'd sunk. It was far. He'd better start swimming. Micklin would push Dezzel down with biforial energy as soon as the mage had a breath, but instinct told Dezzel to freeze as he felt something massive in the water near him. The water was dark and choppy, but something reflected the light enough for its massive body to show. It was so large that Dezzel couldn't see the ends of it as it started to pass beneath his feet, its texture hard and scaly. It moved quickly, the water twisting in on itself and pulling Dezzel down. He almost opened his mouth to scream as his feet bounced against this beast. The current pulled him across its back, where he got entangled with Micklin along the same path. They rolled through the water,
Dessel's elbows and knees sliding against the hard scales. Soon he found himself in open water again, unsure where he was in comparison to the beast and the surface. A flailing Micklin was the only thing close enough to be in sight as he and Dessel were pulled by a strong current. Dessel straightened himself with strong strokes of his arms, glad the pyphorial energy was broken by now. The need for breath was screaming. He had to get to the surface, which he finally found to be above his head now that he was straight. But the water pulled him forward at such a speed that paddling upward did nothing. He caught glimpses of the tip of an enormous tail, long and flat, and much, much bigger than Dessel. He whooshed through the water, nearly slapping him. The water current flipped him around until he lost track of up again. Micklin shot past him and disappeared into the darkness. Dessel was unsure which direction the Pyphorial Mage had gone, but it didn't matter. Getting to the surface, even if it was in the same direction as Micklin, was a matter of life or death now. Dessel straightened himself out again. There was nothing but darkness in every direction he looked. He had to trust his instincts, which told him that the surface was in the same direction as his feet. He flipped around and swam as hard as he could. Soon he caught sight of light. The pain in his chest was heavier than a sack of bricks. He broke through and gasped for air. The waves were violent, however, throwing him around. The salty water splashed into Dessel's mouth and eyes. He swallowed much of it as he continued to gasp. All of his effort went into keeping his head above water. He couldn't look around for Micklin. The waves were worse of a threat. Half of every breath resulted in more water in his lungs. He coughed some out, only for more to be sucked in. He tried to make ice on the surface, but the water thrashed it around. It slipped away too quickly and changed back to water. Dessel would have to manipulate it with more strength. He slapped down his arms and curled his fingers over the water as he forced it into a board of ice, then held on for his life as it tried to rush away in the waves. It floated, but not quite enough to keep Dessel fully above the water. Waves slammed into his back, some coming down over his head. Another struck him in the face as he opened his mouth for air. Dessel held on tight to the ice, coughing and gasping as he battled the waves. Finally, the water started to calm enough for Dessel to catch his breath. The beast below had come and gone, the waves returning to their gentle bobbing. Dessel looked back toward the mountain. He was at least a few minutes' swim from it. He turned in the water as he held onto the floating ice, checking every direction for Micklin. There was nothing but more ocean to see, though there wasn't enough light yet to give him a good view of anything past his surroundings. He could make a path of ice to run back to the mountain, but that would make him easier to spot if Micklin was looking for him. Besides, that worked better in a lake. The waves here were still strong. Dessel swam hard against them, leaving the sheet of ice behind. It was a long and difficult swim to the closest beach on the western side of the Fjallion Mountains. It was hardly a beach at all, just a few yards of rocks that looked as if they'd crumbled off from the mountainside. Dessel pulled himself out of the cold water and took a moment to rest as he lay on the rocks, his chest heaving. He coughed out the last of the water in his lungs and sat up. Hopefully Micklin had drowned. But Dessel figured the Pyphorial Mage was too crafty to let that happen. Dessel had heard of enormous water beasts, but he'd never seen one until now. He shivered at remembering the feeling of its hard, scaly skin against his feet. It didn't seem to be bothered by him or Micklin bumping into it. They were probably so small in comparison that it didn't even feel them. Dessel gathered his stamina and jogged down the rocky beach. He still had miles to go, needing to get around the mountains and head east toward Kaivol. It would be well into the morning by the time he met back with Beatrix and Kernich. At least now the Wind Knights would be aware that Dessel and the others were here with the Akeril, but so would Alaphon's troops. It was up to Adria to figure out the same thing as Dessel. They needed somewhere to meet where they wouldn't be found by soldiers. Adria would no doubt be questioned by psychics as to what she and Dessel had discussed. How was she or any of the Wind Knights supposed to figure out where to meet Dessel for the Akeril without the soldiers finding out, especially when they could be questioned by psychics again at any point? The only solution seemed to be to meet where the soldiers could not take the Akeril, even when they inevitably found out. Dessel laughed without humor, as he thought of a place that might work. It was probably the only place, in fact, that would do. But it came with its own set of risks that might outweigh the benefit of sanctuary from Alaphon's army. Chapter 15.
Dessel stood at the mountainside where he'd hidden the Ackerel. Beatrix and Kernich were nowhere in sight, which was wise of them. Dessel just hoped he didn't have to stand out here long before they saw him. Men from the army would be looking for him, Kernich and the princess, by now. They would certainly think to check Kaevol, specifically the tavern. Arwa would most likely be among the search party. Micklin as well, if the Pyphorial mage survived and could get back to the top of the mountain in short time. Dessel didn't know enough about Pyphorial energy to figure out if Micklin could lift himself all the way to the peak of the Fialion Mountains. All Dessel knew about the energy was that it was easier for Pyphorial mages to sprint at full speed than to lift themselves in the air. Hopefully Micklin had to go around to the northern side of the mountains, into Tenred territory, and walk back up the precarious slopes to get to his army. Dessel didn't have to wait long for Beatrix and Kernich to come out of the trees by the lake. They hustled to meet Dessel by the mountainside as he softened it and started taking out chunks. Beatrix asked what happened, so Dessel explained his conversation with Adria, then his escape down the mountainside and eventually into the water.
"I hope Micklin drowned," Beatrix said, when Dessel was finished.
"He's not going to die that easily,"
Kernich was pulling away the stone two massive handfuls at a time.
"So you and Adria never settled on a place before you ran?"
"No," Dessel replied. "Erwa would have killed me with fire if I'd stayed."
"I know. I'm not disappointed you ran. I'm just disappointed as I think of what we're going to do now."
"There's only one place we can go," Dessel said, "and that's to the crepes." They both stopped and looked at him as if he might be joking.
"We have to," Dessel added. "It's the only place." "They'll kill us or take our Ackerel," Beatrix argued. "Probably both."
"Probably. Maybe not."
"There has to be somewhere better," Beatrix reasoned. "Why not a forest? We can wait at the centre of Raywhite Forest, where we would have met if you hadn't shown up here. The Wind Knights will eventually find us."
"That's unlikely," Dessel countered. "As soon as I left, I'm sure Adria was questioned by psychics. Alifon's commanders know by now that we have the Ackerel and the Apple Seeds, and that we're trying to get both to the Wind Knights. They will send off troops to search the forests, the towns, and the cities. Meanwhile, the Wind Knights won't be allowed to leave the army. Their members will have to sneak away during the night, but doing so will mark them as traitors. It might even damage their reputation to leave behind those troops still fighting. The Wind Knights are some of the most talented combatants in the army, from what I've heard. Abandoning the war effort cannot be done without damage."
"So what makes you think they're going to leave for the Ackerel?"
Kernich asked.
"If I were with them, I might opt to stay and fight."
"Not when following Basin Hiller is the other choice besides fighting. They trust their headmaster, as you do." Dessel had seen the way Kernich had spoken with Lyda's father. The Academy's headmaster was the only reason the warrior and Beatrix were still here.
"The Wind Knights will finish what Basin started."
"Only if they know it's possible,"
Kernich argued.
"It is. With the crepes." "Dessel's right," Beatrix agreed. "Someone among the Wind Knights will eventually realize that the Crepan colony is the only place we can get to where we might be protected from my brother."
Kernich pulled out one of the six bags and stopped to stare at the ground in thought.
"Both of you may be right, but what about Fathol? What about Basin and Lyda?"
"The elves will come searching for us if they haven't already left," Dessel said. "It's more likely that they'll find us before anyone else does, considering there's a portal mage among the elves, but the crepes won't allow them into their village to take our Ackerel." Dessel paused, for he needed more time to finish his thought.
"And why is that?"
Kernich asked.
"The elves helped them build their village in Rigash Forest decades ago, which makes the elves the only race that the crepes might allow into their territory, except Slugari, and that's only to eat them."
Dessel said, "So we'll have to speak with a Crepan leader and convince him to keep the elves out." They pulled out the last bag of Ackerel that had been tucked away in rocks, then started patching up their holes.
"And all of this is after we convince them to let us in?"
Beatrix asked, with obvious scepticism.
"I thought you were with me," Dessel said. "I am with you, as is Kernich. We are together in this, but you must see that there are some details to be worked out."
"We can figure them out on the way. First we have to get there with the Ackerel. We're going to need at least one horse for that. I know this town. I know who can sell us one."
"Or we can steal one,"
Kernich offered.
"No,"
Dessel said. It still doesn't feel right that you and Beatrix took two horses to chase me down when I was leaving this place the last time to meet with Basin, Lydra, and Adria.
It's even more important now than it was then for us to leave hastily, Koenigsegg said. I'm not opposed to exchanging coin for horses, but we can't let anyone here see which direction we went.
Dessel sighed as he realized Koenigsegg was right. But then he thought of something else. There is one horse owner we can speak to who will be on our side no matter who questions her. My mother. But Beatrix, you must give her all the coins we took from the dead king. She needs a horse to fetch supplies, especially while I'm away. I hope she can exchange the coins for Kymarks.
Of course, it's not like the money will be of any use to us in the Crepan colony anyway. Let's go.
Dessel's mother was clearly used to unpleasantly short conversations with Dessel by now. She handed over their horse and at first refused any coin in exchange, but Beatrix insisted.
It's the least we can do after everything you've done for us, the princess said.
Dessel kissed his mother on the cheek. I'm glad you got the chance to see that I'm still alive. You're going to be questioned by Elephon's psychics, and you might hear tales of what happened to me. They could indicate I died. I came close, but as you can see, I'm still here, and I intend to stay that way. We have to go now.
I understand. I won't ask where you're going or look in which direction, she promised. The psychics won't like it when they find out I made a choice not to know, but they aren't going to do anything to me or our tavern because of it.
Effie surprised the three of them by handing each a bag filled with dried food. She couldn't have prepared all of this in the couple of hours since she'd seen them last. She'd been ready to help.
Almost forgot I had those in the basement. I'm glad you came back, even if it's just for a moment.
She cupped Dessel's face, and he leaned down so she could kiss his forehead.
Stay safe, Dessel. And of course you too as well.
Thank you,
Beatrix said. The three of them left. The Crepan village wasn't too far. Dessel had made it there and back in one day, though it was because he knew the path and could cycle his energy to keep up a quick pace. This time, however, they would have to navigate through the dense trees with his family's horse, which carried the Ackerel bags. It was likely to take a few days. Fortunately, he found out soon that Beatrix was able to use her psyche to get the animal to trot after them rather than walk. No one needed to hold the reins. The only issue was the princess tiring as the three of them jogged. She and Koenigsegg had gotten very little rest in the time Dessel had climbed the mountains and returned. He was worse off. He hadn't slept a wink, and the battle with Micklin had taken much out of him as well. Although Dessel was depleted, he had to push on. Part of Alifon's army could be pursuing them in this direction, if the troops were smart enough to figure out that Dessel would take the Ackerel to the Creps.
Any ideas as to how we're going to get into their colony? Beatrix asked.
We'll have to prove ourselves worthy, Dessel said. Probably by fighting, as I don't see another way.
That part should be easy enough, Koenigsegg said. It's convincing them to keep us there that seems unlikely.
Dessel had trouble finding the solution to this issue, his fatigue so heavy that he wanted to drop right there along the mountainside and sleep.
There is a more immediate problem, he told them with dread. I must sleep at some point, and I still haven't figured out how to do so while keeping my mind from drifting into the other plane.
So Fatold is going to know where we are?
Beatrix asked.
As powerful as he is, I don't think even he will be able to tell exactly where we are, but he probably will figure out I'm back from Avira. If I can wait until nightfall to sleep, we should be able to make it to the Crepan colony, even if he sends elves after us.
Beatrix had sorrow in her eyes as she looked at him.
I feel your ache to sleep. You're not going to make it until nightfall?
I'll make it.
When you can't walk any longer, tell us. We'll put you on your horse.
I will make it.
Dessel, she chided. You won't.
He was starting to believe she might be right.
There's no place for me on the saddle anyway.
The Ackerel bags were tied to it.
We'll carry the Ackerel, Koenigsegg said.
Neither of you slept much either, Dessel argued. We've gotten a lot more than you have in the last 2 days.
Beatrix put her hand on his back.
You've done so much for us. Let us do something for you.
The way she and Koenigsegg looked at him with care reminded him of something he hadn't thought of since they'd first met. He was a great deal younger than both of them. This didn't matter to Dessel anymore, but Beatrix and Koenigsegg probably never forgot that he was only 18.
You don't have to feel more responsible for me just because I'm younger, Dessel said.
He couldn't decide whether he was insulted that they thought they needed to take care of him, or if he appreciated their worry.
"We are responsible for you," Beatrix said to his surprise. "I was reminded of this when I met your mother again."
"What does she tell you?"
"Nothing. It's what I saw."
"And what is that exactly?" Dazzle's offence was starting to come out through his tone.
"Your life. You still have one so long as we're successful."
"So will you and Kernich."
She shook her head. "Not the one we used to have."
Dazzle wasn't sure he wanted to return to the life he had. Of course he missed his mother, but hadn't he proven that his talents would be wasted at the tavern? He certainly had to himself.
"I don't understand why it matters what life we had before this," he said. "There is no going back for any of us. Even if I do end up at the same place I was before, everything has changed."
"It's still up to us to get you there," Beatrix insisted.
"All of us. Don't take this mostly onto yourself."
His fatigue struck him hard as he realized how much responsibility he'd been holding on to. Beatrix and Kernich were two of the most capable people in Kiru, each in their own way. Dazzle needed to trust them more. Yes, he could probably walk until nightfall, but at what cost to his mind and spirit?
"I suppose I could use a quick nap if your offer still stands."
Kernich started untying the ropes around the ackerel bags.
"You'll sleep until the afternoon."
"I still don't see how two of you can carry six bags."
"We'll keep two on the saddle and position them as a backrest for you,"
Kernich explained. Beatrix took one of the bags from Kernich and put it on her back.
"We'll be fine. Speak to Lyda in the other plane if you can. I know how much you want to. Then rest."
Dazzle couldn't bring himself to resist any longer. He missed Lyda as acutely as he longed for sleep. He hoped he could reach her. Moments after he was settled on the saddle, he closed his eyes. He meant to fall into the other plane. But all he did was slip into a deep sleep. Dazzle awoke later with a startle. He was sure he'd dreamed, for the feeling of coming back from a journey to another world still lingered in his heart. Or perhaps all he'd done was go to the other plane.
"You're awake,"
Kernich said.
"Anything from Lyda?"
Dazzle rubbed his eyes as he looked around. They were in the midst of the forest. It was impossible to tell how far they'd gone from Kaevol.
"I'm not sure. Let me think."
He tried to recall interactions with Fatal or Lyda, but he couldn't remember any.
"It was just a dream," Dazzle realized.
It was intriguing how dreaming could feel so much like going to the other plane. Considering that his mind often went to the other plane when falling in and out of sleep, he figured there must be some connection between it and dreaming. He wanted to explore that thought further, but what clues could he offer? His time was better spent exploring the other plane. He warned Kernich and Beatrix that his mind would be elsewhere, then dove through the wall of black in his mind. He appeared over the ocean of bright energy. He pushed himself down, crashing into the watery energy the same way he and Micklin had crashed into the ocean earlier. The thought almost pulled Dazzle out of the plane as he recalled his aggression, the sudden switch when he knew he had to kill Micklin. It was sometime before then that Dazzle had determined he had it in him to kill Micklin. The switch in his mind and heart readied him to take another life. But there was still a difference between being prepared to kill and holding Micklin underwater until he stopped moving. Dazzle felt that he could do it. He could stab Micklin in the heart. He could choke the life out of him. He would stand on the Pythorial Mage's neck until it broke if the opportunity came. Dazzle shuddered in the physical world. His mind was pulled back into his body. Beatrix and Kernich were watching him as they walked beside the horse.
"Something wrong?"
Kernich asked. Dazzle shook his head. But Beatrix must have sensed something with Psyche.
"What is it?"
"It's nothing, really. I'm going back now."
He closed his eyes and tried to clear the vivid images of killing. It didn't work. He wondered what it said about him that he was this ready to brutally take a life. What would Lyda think? When he couldn't come to an answer and he realized he was wasting valuable time while his two comrades carried heavy bags so he could ride on his horse, he made himself focus. Dazzle pushed his mind back into the other plane, deep into the ocean. Familiar senses returned. It felt as if he was suddenly in the audience of a musical play. He let every sight and sound go unexplored for now, casting his mind out like a net. He searched for life. There were two different forms of it here. The first were the spirits of what Dazzle assumed to be all races. He still couldn't differentiate between them to tell if it was only humans here, or if everyone showed up in some form. Dezzel's mind was the other life form, different from the others in a familiar way to Dezzel. It reminded him of a few mornings in Kaevol long ago, when he'd awoken just before sunrise after a restful sleep. He liked to explore a town that was still new to him, believing everyone was asleep but him. Now he was old enough to know that many grown men and women got up during the night. They just didn't set out from their homes like he had. It could be that